Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Brian Sons, also known as Onyx. This is Onyx Nights Paranormal Radio. Man, have I got a great show coming tonight. I have been waiting for this show for at least a month or so. I've got Gene St. Jean, who's sculptor of action figures. He's going to be coming on. He's representing Creature Replica and his new line of cryptid action figures that will be coming out really soon in the fall, and we're going to be talking about that, and of course cryptids and Sasquatch and so forth and so on. Hopefully I'm coming through. I'm getting a little bit of static. I tell you what, guys, I've talked to Gene. I've seen this line, and I mean, I'm more excited than Yoda watching a porno. I mean, this is looking great, and I'm really, really hoping to get in on this and get these action figures. And you guys out there in the Bigfoot community, Sasquatch community, you guys, if you haven't seen it, I've posted images of it everywhere, on all of my Facebook pages, groups. Check it out. definitely get in. Let's try to help support Gene and get this rolling. I mean, anyone who's in this field knows there's no really good representation. Well, there is some sculpts by another friend of mine, but this is action figures. As far as action figures go, there's no really good representations of cryptids or Sasquatch or even Yeti, excuse me. So we got to get in on this and support this, because the more we support it as a community, the further it will go. And you guys know me. If you know me well enough, you know that I'm a collector of action figures. I love Sasquatch. I love anything to do with cryptids, paranormal. So this venture is combining all of it together under one banner. Everything that I love is coming together. I've been waiting for these figures for years. I've been praying that someone would actually do this and do it right. And from what I've seen, it looks like it's happening. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and bring Gene on with me.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Hey, man, I thought that I had you on mute, but I guess I didn't. This site is kind of crazy at times. Obviously, you're not muted. So, Gene, man, I'm telling you, I mean, I don't know if you heard my whole intro or anything, but I am so excited about this line of action figures that's coming out. And I can't wait till they're actually available.
Yeah, since we started talking about it, me and Jeff Byers, who's my partner in it, we've been kind of on pins and needles about it, too. Obviously, the initial stage of doing the sculptures and the prototyping and the paintwork and everything ends up being the easiest part of the whole process. Then after that, it's locking down distribution and getting the stuff through the factory and getting it back out. And typically, you're looking at, you know, a 6 to 10 month turnaround from start to finish on a line like this. So we have what we initially considered the toughest part, prototyping, done, but now the real difficult part is just beginning.
So where are you at right now at this stage as far as the development?
Well, in terms of development, we still have some more revised pieces for the sculpture. We have one more figure we haven't shown yet. The fourth figure in the line. We have another Sasquatch variant that we haven't shown yet that'll include a different paint scheme and a different fur color and also a different head sculpt. And then in terms of the technical part of it, right now we're in negotiations with the distributor to determine whether we'll be self-distributing or distributing to somebody else, and also working with the factory and getting the line, you know, our initial tooling copies through the factory, getting our steel molds and cut and stuff like that to begin production. So
now,
we're right at the cusp of beginning production, pretty much.
Now, give us a rundown of the characters that are in the first wave that are being displayed by myself, your partner Jeff as well.
Okay, the first wave is basically it's held down by the Sasquatch, which you've seen, which is the one with the reddish fur color and the grayish skin, and the Yeti. And in the photos that we've been showing, we have four figures in the photos, but two of them are basically the same Sasquatch with a different paint color, which we just put in there until the last figure is done. So the lineup is basically Sasquatch, Yeti, the Horror Hound, which is actually, we're doing that in collaboration with Horror Hound Magazine. And the fourth figure is the Louisiana Rougarou, which is basically a regular werewolf, so in the same scale as these guys, not quite as sort of Franken-zombie as the horror hound, but more of a traditional werewolf. So that's the basic line of those four characters. And then there's at least two more variants of Sasquatch repaints with different head sculpts.
Sweet, sweet. So let's talk, first of all, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, what scale are these?
These are basically scaled to be in, to be able to relate to 6- and 7-inch action figure lines. So if you took like a Diamond Select Marvel character like Spider-Man or Gambit and used him as sort of your human scale figure, the Sasquatch is about 8 inches tall. So if you listen to your basic witness reports where the creatures could be anywhere from 6 to 9 or 10 feet tall as an upper limit, then he'd basically be in scale with a 7-inch human figure. And the other figures are kind of along the same lines. The Yeti is about 9 inches, 9 and change. And the Horror Hound is, he's probably close to 8.5, 9 inches in that basic kind of crouch we have them in the pictures there. So they're real big figures. What we're looking to do is we want to work in 7-inch scale. We're not particularly fond of 3 3/4-inch scale, although that has its attractions too. What we really want to push is that what's become kind of classic action figure 7-inch scale.
Right. But, I mean, it also depends on how this takes off, correct, as far as where you'll be able to go and diversify, as far as scale.
Right, yeah. If we can get a toehold with this basic 7-inch wave, we have no shortage of other ideas for doing, you know, we could do 3 3/4 baselines, we could do some deluxe products, which would be in the 16 to 18 inch range as rotovinyl simplified figures. We had talked about doing some resin statue stuff. It's kind of endless, but it all relies on just getting in there and getting established with this line and then building upon it. You know, it's just everything else is fun to talk about, but it's sort of putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying at the opening. This is it, guys. I mean, if you guys want this and want to see, and I do, I want to see this take off because there's so much potential. And if you guys want to see this go further with maybe you have a cryptid that you particularly like, if you want to see that cryptid possibly eventually made, we've got to support this. You know, we've got to all come together and make this happen. Gene, you're not new. You're not new to the action figure world. It's funny.
No, I've been doing this for just about a little under 20 years. I started out, I worked about 5 years as an apprentice at a doll studio in upstate New York. From that point, I went to McFarlane Toys, and after a little over a year or so, I ended up, they put me in charge of the sculpting department there. So I worked for those guys just under 7 years. And then I moved out on my own and started working for Diamond Select in D.C. and done some stuff for Mezco, a couple things here and there for other people. So I've been doing action figures exclusively for probably 15 years now.
That's cool as shit, man. I mean, you've got the my idea of the dream job, and I hope to one day be at that level. But, you know, when you and I first started talking, it's a funny story because I didn't realize exactly who you were. I thought you just, you know, some guy that's just starting up out of his own home who may have dabbled a little bit in the action figure world, and now you kind of. I thought this was all like a home-based thing. And then you and I got to talking. And you sent me to your DeviantArt page. And I'm looking through there, and I'm like, holy shit. I've got action figures made by you. I've got the Marvel Select Venom. I've got, the Lord of Darkness from Legend, the Todd McFarlane one. Go ahead, give us a couple more names of action figures that you did that I'm sure many of our listeners may actually have.
Well, the last couple of years, I've been doing all the Universal Monsters select figures for Diamond. So I've done the Wolfman, Son of Frankenstein, and Creature are coming out in a couple of months. I did Jekyll and Hyde from Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein. So I've done a ton of those. Right now I'm working on a couple of series of Sin City for Diamond. I'm also working on Kill Bill. All the Batman 66 busts that they've been showing, I've done all of those and some of the vinyl banks. I've also done, in their Marvel Select line, I did, well, you mentioned the Venom. I also did an Anti-Venom, an Agent Venom, Nightcrawler, Hawkeye, and Gambit from those waves. I also do some of their Femme Fatales. I did, which are, they're kind of a 7th scale, which is like a 9-inch statue, I think. I've done Kabuki and Adam Eve from Invincible, plus a few of their own proprietary designs. And that's all just for Diamond. For DC, I've done some Batman Black and White stuff. I did a Batman and Joker designed by Lieber Mayo, and also a Superman and by Lee, and also a Rorschach from the reboot of the comic series of The Watchmen. And then I did a lot of their Amakami sort of anime-influenced versions of their Femme Fatales in their own DC universe, like Harley and Ivy and whatnot. I've done a ton of stuff. And then for Todd, I had done, you know, like I said, I did Darkness, I did Edward Scissorhands, I did Sarah Connor from Terminator from their Movie Maniacs line. For Mezco, I did all of their Mega Scale Thundercats. And I did series 4 and 5 of Cinema Fear, which basically encompassed Jason, Freddy, and Leatherface, and some of their other outside characters there. And I did American Psycho for NECA, and some of their Pirates of the Caribbean. So I've done a ton of stuff. If you're currently collecting, you'd be pretty hard pressed to not have something that I did on your shelf, more than likely. Unless you're collecting like My Little Ponies or something like that. Haven't touched any of that crap yet.
Well, right, and you've got a, guys, you've got a DeviantArt page, correct? Where everyone could see some of your work. And I'm going to go ahead and post that on the websites here. And if you guys want to go and check it out, I'm pretty sure that most of you will have some of Gene's work somewhere along the lines. Now, Gene, you've also done some work for Warcraft, correct?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those guys. I did. At the time, DC Direct had a kind of a second imprint during in their toy division called DC Unlimited, and we did a whole bunch of stuff with Blizzard. I did a Torin, which is one of those big kind of bull guys. I did an undead warlock with a hood and its big kind of trident thing. I did a couple of Draenei, which were, at the time was a brand new character. I did a female Draenei mage and a male Draenei paladin with a big kind of a Thor's hammer, almost like a Mjolnir,
yeah,
something like that. So yeah, I did a dwarf on this mechanical bird thing. They called it a Mechanostrider, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I've done some of that stuff too. The Warcraft stuff was really cool. It was really grueling to work on, but ultimately it was probably some of the most complicated, detailed stuff I've ever done, even to this point.
And I wish that you, I hope that eventually you would be able to get back more into also fantasy characters again, with the line that's being developed now, or perhaps a split off from it, if you will.
Well, the nice thing about what me and Jeff are trying to do now is we can dabble into whatever end of monsters, fantasy, or cryptozoology we feel like. I mean, right now, our primary focus, what we wanted to start with specifically, was Bigfoot, Yowie, Yeti, all the relic hominids that you would most people would talk about from sort of, you know, what right now is kind of the pseudoscientific realm, which will hopefully become a zoological thing. And
yeah.
Our idea was to treat the line as not as a crypto line, but as a zoological approach to it. So we wanted everything to be mostly based on witness reports and have sort of an anatomical sense to it.
And these things look great. And you and I have talked previously. You know, I was doing the whole headcast thing, and I was believe me. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, because to have something all your own that you have certain liberties with is much better than, in my opinion. I doing Marvel stuff, doing G.I. Joe stuff on my side of things. It was good because that's what people want. That's what would sell. But at the same time, I kind of felt like my hands were tied, because I had to make these items look exactly like years of history has embedded them to look in people's minds. You know, cause, or you'd get somebody that said, "Hey, man, that doesn't look like the Hulk to me." Something along those lines. So I'm trying to also break away from that right now, because I want to do more of my own things, my own characters, my own creations, the only thing restricting me is my own imagination, and whatever I create, that's what it's going to be. And you doing this, yes, you have to stick to some guidelines as far as eyewitness reports or things of that nature. But you have a little bit more liberty than doing a comic character or a comic line. And that's no offense towards comic characters or comic lines, because they're great and there's a niche for them and they pay. But from a creative aspect, I enjoy being able to sculpt and do my own thing from my own imagination, as opposed to doing someone else's property, if you will.
Yeah, you know, but of course, pulling stuff out of your head in a lot of ways is a lot more rewarding. But I've been lucky enough where, especially at this point in my career, a lot of my associations, there's so many guys that do this stuff now. Generally, if you're going to a specific guy, especially somebody who's been into it for a while, you kind of want that guy's take on whatever your project is. So luckily, that's kind of the situation I'm mostly in now. Like, if I get hired, it's because they want me to put my spin on it, especially with Diamond. It's basically, you know, when they put together their project list, they kind of pitch the thing to me and ask me what I'd be interested in working on, and it's more of a creative collaboration. They rely on me really to project manage and develop the product. You know, sometimes in association with their Art Asylum guys, sometimes it's me and their and kind of their project director, but there's an awful lot of freedom within that. But as you said, it's a different ballgame when, like, me and Jeff talk about some creature that we want to see a toy made of, and there's no one else staring over our shoulders. We talk about it, we kick around a couple of ideas, and then I just go. It's a very different environment, because I work with a lot of movie company stuff and television shows and everything like that through my clients, and some things are very restrictive. And there are some jobs that I work literally as a pair of hands for an art director, and there's, you know, I really don't put an awful lot of myself into it, because it's just it's not necessarily appreciated. And then sometimes, you know, I have pretty much free reign. I get a drawing, they tell me, you know, send us a picture when you're done. So
the world
kinda,
is full of,
you know, like I said, I'm at a point now where I pretty much like everything I do because I only take jobs that I like now.
Right. But, well, you know, you and I had spoke
but
earlier.
It's definitely a different ballgame when you're doing kind of your whole own
thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's more, I can only describe it as more freeing. You know, I'm not at the level that you are, of course, but, you know, even for me, you know, you kind of get burnt out on doing the same type characters over and over and over again. So it's good to break up that monotony. You know, you and I were speaking earlier, and, you know, you have an action figure in this line, the Yeti, which you took a little bit of liberty with, but to me it still looks badass. And you know, you could even... you could even possibly go do that with the Sasquatch and other things, kind of a variant, if you will, quote Gene's interpretation or Gene's version, if that makes sense to you, if you understand what I'm saying there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I mentioned briefly before, our initial idea was to kind of treat this as like a line of animals or, you know, or hybrid animals, whatever, you know, a zoological approach. And when we came to the Yeti, the problem with the Yeti is that from typical reports, the Yeti's not white. That's really a Hollywood creation. Yeti's typically more of a pongid with, you know, reddish fur, more like an orangutan-ish-like creature, or even darker fur, dark brown or black fur.
Yeah.
It's never really looked like this except in, you know, monster movies and cartoons and things. That's a total Hollywood fabrication. The problem is trying to sell a Yeti that basically looked like an orangutan or another kind of ape, you'd never be able to sell it. It wouldn't make any sense to the common person in pop culture, and probably not even a lot of people into Bigfoot and things like that, because even...
Because of what has been embedded...
Yeah, people's expectations are shaped by what they see all the time, even within the research field. I mean, how many folks do you know that their idea of the creatures or everything, everyone that they know that have allegedly seen things or heard things, and the representation within the Patterson-Gimlin film, there's a certain expectation. And there's a broader array of ways of looking at a Sasquatch than looking at a Yeti, you know. And so me and Jeff had kind of batted it back and forth. I probably did 3 or 4 revisions on the proportions on a Yeti, and even in terms of the size, before we landed on this. And it was Jeff's actually direction to try making the proportions a little more cartoonish, where his hands are very big and he has bigger forearms, and then just going completely all-out monster, because it also helped to change the tone of the line a little bit, because we agreed that we really wanted the Bigfoot to be very placid and quiet and sort of still in terms of temperament. You know, the way that we sort of interpret a lot of the reports where the creature's disposition tends to be more like a mountain gorilla, not necessarily aggressive, although you do hear those reports, but they're kind of few and far between. And it depends on how many, you know, like pancake-eating, berry-eating Bigfoot stories you want to believe. But
yeah,
far and
above,
they tend to be...
You know, here's my take on that, Jeff. First of all, just like anything else on this planet, I'm sure it has moods. I'm sure there's some inbreeding somewhere. I'm sure there's some that might be a little mentally disturbed, you know. But at the same time, I don't think that they're 100% of the time violent. But I also don't think that they're going to walk on the set of the Andy Griffith Show either. You know, it's you just have to approach it the same way you would anything else in the wild.
Right, and also, if you consider that this creature might be further along the evolutionary chain potentially than, say, you know, like a gorilla, an ape, or an orangutan, if they were closer related to what we became, human beings are the most dangerous goddamn animal on the planet. You know, think about what we do to each other. So if this creature has any of that in him, he's definitely going to have a propensity towards violence, or some of them will. Like you say, you know, people.
Yeah, and
can be,
you know. I also think
people
that
people can be preachers, or they can be serial killers. There's a wide, pretty wide chasm they can spread
that's
across.
That's right. I also think that it varies depending on the location as well. I think that just like any other creature, even humans to some aspects, some could be a little bit more wild than others. Some could be a little bit more adapted, if you will, or used to human activity, whereas some may not and may have just lived solitary in the woods and possibly never seen a human before in their life. It's all conjecture and speculation at this point, you know, because like,
and there's also the pressure that could be put on a specific group because of, you know, encroachment on their habitat.
That's
you
right.
Know, I know, like the common attitude towards the creatures that are reported in the South is they tend to have a crappier attitude, maybe a little more aggressive. And the Pacific Northwest variety tend to be the ones that are more kind of shy and retiring. You hear different things. I mean, granted, you know, there's so very little, well, there's really no actual solid documentation of anything. It's all hearsay. But even if you take a percentage of that, you know, sampling percentages from all those areas, you do sort of get a lot of concurrence to some of the stories. So you can kind of at least wildly speculate about exactly what you're saying in terms of certain areas, you know. And there's even possibly, if you were to take a few steps further and speculate even wilder, you could even say that there may be variations in maybe the speciation or just the variations within those species as to what these are, you know, just
exactly.
Like, you know, you have mountain gorillas, you have lowland gorillas, and, you know, within other types of species of apes and monkeys, there's variation. So if you're going to say that there could be one type, there may be a variation of types.
Excuse me. Yeah, let's put it in something that, in relation to something that everyone knows, dogs. I mean, you have wolves, you have dogs, you have hyena. Look at all the different variations of those there are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not too far-fetched. It's not too hard to understand or to even comprehend if you put it in terms of things that we do know about other animals and creatures, wild animals. If we put it in terms of the ones that we do know, we can start to see certain similarities, especially with, like you said, the mountain gorillas, which are, we know, are very elusive. They've only been discovered quite recently in the whole scheme of things.
Yeah. And
so
think about the folklore that built up around the mountain gorilla through the indigenous people in Africa before they were actually officially discovered by white people. Basically,
right.
They were, you know, they were looked at as animals that would raid towns and kidnap women and, you know, murder and all that. And when they were finally discovered, they just kind of want to do their thing. They're very placid, quiet animals unless they're threatened, you know, and then you take something, one of the other great apes, the chimps, they're a lot different. Chimps can be a lot more dangerous, a lot more aggressive. They're a different, you know, a different creature within that whole realm
of
great apes.
That's right. And
so there could be the
said.
Same, there could be the same variation within something like this. I mean, granted, you know, once you, the whole thing on its face, based on the scant evidence, is kind of mental. But if you take that first step, you start looking, okay, these foot casts look like total nonsense. These foot casts, there's splayed toe patterns. There's, you can start to make speculations like Dr. Meldrum does about the brachiation of the mid-tarsal break, that's the term, and things like that. Then all of a sudden you start to have data that's not necessarily, it's not necessarily proof, but is a form of evidence. So you take all those bits of scant evidence, start to put them together, and then maybe you have enough of a foothold to start to speculate further. And really, science is built on speculation, and building a hypothesis is one of your first steps into moving towards actually having some sort of a theory. But you have to start somewhere. And that's where this field suffers the most, is there's a ton of very interested, very enthusiastic amateurs who go into the woods and gather evidence and try to make notes on what they perceive to be behaviors with very little actual training. And you look at, I can maybe think of a handful of people that are actually degree doctors and things, you know, like Dr. Meldrum and Kathy Strain, who worked out in California with the Park Service and stuff.
Right.
Who are actual degree professionals who have an interest in this subject. That, no doubt, at great risk to their professional career.
I think for the most part, society in general is under the impression that the whole Sasquatch Bigfoot thing is just a recent thing. I don't think they actually take the time to do the research and see that there's record of these beings going back thousands of years in the Native American lore.
Right.
It's not just a recent since the you know, most people, they think Bigfoot, they think, if they're old enough, they think back to the $6 Million Man show. And oh, it's something made in Hollywood. One thing with the Finding Bigfoot show that is beneficial is that it's making people aware of a little bit more of the history of these things. I mean, all shenanigans aside with that show, at least it's bringing that awareness to everyone that this isn't just something recent. This isn't a just a fad thing. This is something that is actually goes back very, very far in our history human beings.
I always kind of hope with anything that comes up, like, you know, just like Finding Bigfoot and the Bigfoot Bounty Show and all the myriad of documentaries and things like that, that these things, what they do is, whether you agree with how they're approached or not, what they do is they raise consciousness in pop culture. And the reason that somebody like Brian Sykes got backed to do that TV show with the, was that from the BBC or whatever it was? You know, about 50% of it was pretty good, and then they cracked on the Bigfoot part of it. But essentially, Bigfoot being back in pop culture the way it is what is going to bring more scientists into the field, because all of a sudden, there may be guys that come in and say, you know, if these idiots are going to give me this much money to talk about Bigfoot on a friggin' TV show, of course I'm going to take it, and
but
gradually
it'll
bring more people into it.
At the same time, it's also bringing in the scumbags and the hoaxers and the liars, Rick Dyer, Justin Smeha. You know, it's bringing those guys to the forefront, you know, thinking, oh, I can make a quick dollar, you know, off of some cockamamie-ass story.
Yeah, but that's going to be in anything. That's going to be in any place where there's perception of money to be made.
That's right.
Or, you know, getting attention. I mean, there's a lot in, I read tons of stuff in this field, and everything from straight Bigfoot lore to anthropological stuff to books about great apes, everything that I think will support what I know about this. I'm a couch researcher.
So you're one of us, man. You're one of us.
But the thing that I like to see is I like to see legitimate, or at least in as much as it's possible, interesting, potentially legitimate data. But when people come in and kind of pee in the pool, so to speak, with nonsense like not even a good hoax, but like crappy-looking stuffed bodies, wild stories with absolutely no supporting data that just sends people into a tailspin, and the Bigfoot community as it is, I've met so many really interesting people, but you read like the different boards and the various Facebook groups, this is a field where the people, they eat their own freaking dead. It's like they'll tear each other apart verbally about stuff
he's
that
not,
has never been proven.
He's not talking about Sasquatch guys. He's talking about the actual people on these Facebook pages.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's a lot like people arguing about their favorite sports teams, you know? Except with sports, you can see it's like this guy's got this kind of a quarterback rating and this guy sucks. You know, there's very little data for people to support their various theories on. And
right. And see, that's what gets me is you get these people.
You kind of always have to come back to that premise where it's the more extraordinary the claim, the more extraordinary the data has to be to support that claim. Or I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember the exact thing. But so, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I understand what you're saying.
When I see people
tearing each other apart
over something that could just be a wild story and they don't have a single bit of evidence, that stuff to me, stories are interesting, but they're anecdotes. And they don't do an awful lot for you other than maybe there are tidbits from those anecdotes that you can use to support a potential theory. So you have to kind of consider a lot of it. You know, although I'll admit the things that I tend to consider seriously are the elements and stories that support a biological creature. I don't buy any of the psychic stuff, the predator-like cloaking abilities. There's no anecdote. There's no animal that basically has the physical or supernatural capabilities that sometimes are attributed to this animal. And you can't just randomly pick, oh, well, it's going to have cloaking abilities like this undersea fish or something like that.
Well,
it can communicate mentally like sonar from a whale on an Aquaman cartoon. I mean, none of that makes any sense.
You get these people who are like, well, Bigfoot's an alien. If Bigfoot, people, I'm going to break this down for you. If Sasquatch is an alien that's able to fly around in some fancy, high-tech-ass spaceship through space or interdimensional, however you want to think, if a Sasquatch is doing that, why the hell is he running around buck-ass naked, just covered in hair?
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
I mean, does he know how to make spaceships, but he doesn't know how to make freaking clothes?
And not only that.
I mean, come on.
I'll keep coming back to Jeff Meldrum because he's one of the people I think that is one of the most solid to listen to as far as theories and things like that.
He was talking about
all the stuff about Dr. Ketchum's DNA study came out, and her conjecture about the hybridization occurring, what'd she say, like 10 or 15,000 years ago, and then that would mean you'd have some sort of proto-Bigfoot creature with a human woman.
The whole angel screwing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah without even getting into that mentalness.
Yeah.
Yeah, without
you know,
even getting
I watched
into
a,
that.
I listened to a... go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. We're kind of fighting over the...
Yeah, we're kind of getting on the tangent.
No, without even getting into the supernatural aspect, how would a creature like that, that has started out, and its analog started out as having culture, you know, maybe not as advanced as ours, but they had a proto-human, like a Neanderthal-like culture, why would it discard all aspects of culture to go live in the woods? You know, it just... That doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
Someone would not just continue to evolve or progress, but would regress back to, you know, a more primitive state, almost like a woodland ape kind of state.
We can get into the whole evolution argument. I really don't want to, but think about this, people who think that we evolved from chimps. Evolution is supposed to be for the betterment of a species. Why would a chimpanzee or an anthro or whatever that's covered with body hair, covered with fur, why would they evolve to lose their fur or hair and then have to don the fur or hair of another animal? It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. You know, by modern evolutionary theory, you know, the evolutionary tree is less of a tree and more of a bush. You know, again, I'm paraphrasing stuff that I've heard Dr. Melgren say, so this is nothing that I'm pulling out of my own head. But
right.
Where you have these multiple branches that we split off from any sort of great apes, you know, hundreds of thousands, million years ago. I don't know what the timeline is. I don't have it in front of me. But so they went in their direction, and then all sorts of variations on what would become humanity went in another direction. The majority of those died off. And now even recently, like over the last 10 or 15 years, they're starting to realize that we probably didn't drive Neanderthals into extinction exactly, but interbred with them, and basically the stronger strain seemed to survive, but most people still have elements of the Neanderthal within their genetic chain. And I think you do have to look at why all of a sudden we come from these, you know, Australopithecines or whatever we evolved out of, which were somewhat hair-covered, to become completely hairless mammals, one of the only hairless mammals, really.
Yeah.
I would think that that would probably be not only an evolutionary thing, but also the fact that we evolve the culture. And with culture becomes, you start to develop adornments and clothing and houses. So eventually, less and less we actually needed to be covered with body fur, because technology, in as much as what was really very primitive technology, started to eliminate the need from it. So it was almost like the evolution of culture evolved and helped co-evolve sort of almost the physiology. I don't know whether that holds water scientifically, but in my artistic sense, it makes perfect sense to me.
I understand what you're saying. I don't believe that we evolved from chimpanzees or the apes. Because if that was the case, somewhere you would go to a zoo and you would still see a chimp or ape somewhere along that, I mean, you know, along that line of becoming a human. It's like tadpoles and frogs, you know, you see them eventually grow their tail and legs. You could still see that process. We don't still see that process among the apes. I think that there was something that intervened and made that jump possible. I don't think it was just a natural thing. I think there was some kind of outside influence. And I've talked about this before on the show. You guys, I'm not going to get into all that. That's a whole other show. Mm-hmm. But you know, going back to what you had said earlier about the posts and how people get so just uncivilized or rude. On these different pages and stuff. First of all, guys, there is no experts when it comes to Sasquatch or Yeti or most of any of the other cryptids either. There's no experts. It's just enthusiasts. It's all the evidence is anecdotal. It's circumstantial. A lot of things that we think we know about these things is speculation, because we don't have one in a lab somewhere to study alive. So that's why I say, until mm-hmm. that happens, we don't really know much shit about it.
Yeah.
You know, so all these people getting pissed off on these websites and arguing with this one and arguing with that one, you're arguing about something that is not scientifically proven to exist. So basically, you're arguing about nothing. You know, technically, you're arguing about nothing, because none of this is 100% documented, and I'm talking years of research and of observation. None of this has gone through those steps. So basically, it's all, like you said, Gene, hearsay and speculation about, based on different reports, you know, and based on what we know of other apes, hominids. You know, so basically we're guessing at what these creatures are like. We're guessing at what they do on a day-to-day basis. you know, and guessing at how their lifestyle and what they do in their lifetime, we're all guessing at that, you know, based on stuff we've read or stuff we've heard.
You think about even with dinosaurs and anything, you know, in the fossil record, as much information as science can glean from fossils in terms of, you know, they can speculate from bones what the attachment points would be for certain muscles based on modern animals, and they can see where attachment points would be, and they can speculate as to muscle mass, fat and deposits, and from those points they can go on and say, well, this is what type of diet an animal would need based on its size and the area that it was in. There's a certain amount of creative speculation to build on that skeleton.
I'm going to give an example. An example is this. We don't know if dinosaurs actually had feathers. We don't know what color a dinosaur's skin was. Scientists don't know.
Fossils, they actually did find imprints of the feathers.
Right.
So they do know that dinosaurs had feathers.
Right.
They are able to tell on some of them, based on the data in the fossil, that there was actually a certain amount of color data
But most of it is guessing based on the closest living relatives, whether it be crocodiles, whether it be alligators, whether it be lizards in the jungle, you know. I mean, when you watch Jurassic Park and they show the Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, in one he's brown, in another he's green. They don't know that. They're just guessing based on camouflage that would be needed, closest living relatives now, crocodiles, alligators. As far as we know, they could all have been polka dotted, you know? We're not going off on that. We're just using that as an example as when it comes to Sasquatch and Yeti and other cryptids. We don't know shit.
It's all based completely on anecdotal evidence. You know, I'm not going to cast aspersions at anyone's personal experiences because they're personal experiences. So if someone says they saw one, they saw him do this or whatever, I'm not going to argue with it because I wasn't there. And to be honest, anybody who's seen, says they've seen one, I'd love to be able to believe. So I'll certainly give them the benefit of the doubt. But I think once you go beyond that point, we don't have, not unlike dinosaurs, with dinosaurs we have a lot of data from bones at least. We don't have any bones from Sasquatch or any of these other, you know, extant human species or relic hominids, anything like that. There's nothing to base it on physically other than the footprint. There's a certain amount of the footprints that are fake, but then there's a large degree of them that are unexplainable. And then there's a smaller degree of them that actually exhibit movement of the foot in the steps, you know, where you see the spreading of the toes, you know, things like that.
The dermal
ridges. You're basing an awful lot over a very small amount of data, you know.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you guys, I've had some experiences, and Gene, I've talked to you about this before, where I've actually seen Sasquatch on three different occasions in my lifetime, not in the same place, various different states in the country. And I want to talk to you about how you got into the cryptids and Sasquatch as well. But I've always been fascinated with it, and doing the research online, looking here, looking there, reading all these damn reports, I got so frustrated that I said, you know what? F it, man. I'm just going to go out there myself and find out for myself, you know. And that's what I started doing. I'm going out weekly, at night, sometimes two, three times a week, and you know, I'm hearing sounds. I'm not seeing anything, but I'm hearing sounds. I went out the other night, put some apples and some peanut butter and stuff like that out. All of that was completely missing the next morning when I went. I'm not saying it was Sasquatch. Not everything in the woods is Sasquatch. It could have been a raccoon. It could have been a possum. It could have been something else that climbed way up in that tree and got it. Was it interesting? Yes, it was interesting. Does it demand further research of a different nature? Yes. You know, in the future when I go out there, I'm going to set the apples up, everything up a little higher. I'm going to put peanut butter in something that is more sealed to where only something with fingers can open it, you know, with a screw-on lid or something like that. I'm going to make arrangements to set my digital recorder out there near the area that I bait all night long. It was just a test. I'm not going to go out and say, oh, man, a Bigfoot came and licked the peanut butter off these leaves, and a Bigfoot picked these apples up out the tree branches. You know, I'm not going to go say that because I know that there's other life, wildlife in that area that's capable of climbing a tree and you know. But it tells me
I would say number one culprit in a lot of those cases, not saying in your case, but we have one of the many different critters we have around here are raccoons. And those buggers, they're pretty wily. They can get into anything, on top of anything. I hear them up on top of my freaking roof sometimes. They jump off the tree, they're scampering and go off the roof for whatever reason.
It's funny you mention it because that night I was out there, we heard them digging in an aluminum trash can. Over at the recreation area at the lake, we heard them digging in that, knocked it over. When we were leaving, watched a raccoon cross the road in front of me, shine my headlamp on it, and watched it climb all the way up a tree. So I know, you know, and when we were walking on the bridge, we looked down with our headlamps, and there was a raccoon running along, you know, the water's edge, ahead of us a little bit, trying to get away. So I know that those are out there. You know, and that's the thing, guys. You know, I was on a couple of websites, on Facebook groups and whatever, where they didn't want skeptics at all. You either were a hardcore believer or you get the hell out. And I don't understand that because me as a researcher, I have to be a skeptic, or else every little bent blade of grass is going to be a fucking Bigfoot. Every tree branch broken is going to be a Bigfoot. You have to be a skeptic. If not, then you're coming up with incorrect data based on your hypothesis. It doesn't work like that. You have to be a skeptic to rule out everything else. And Gene, let's talk, man. How did you get into Sasquatch? Did you have a sighting or an encounter yourself?
No, I've never had any actual experiences. For me, I'm coming at it from somebody who's always into monsters since I was a little kid. And it was either fourth grade or sixth grade, I can't remember which, but whichever grade it was in, we had a little library area in the back of the room. And there was this little magazine, like a mini magazine, like maybe 8-9 inches tall. And I remember there was three issues that grabbed me. One of them, there was a feature on John Chambers and the Planet of the Apes makeups. There was one on the Loch Ness Monster, and then there was one on Bigfoot. And the cover of the magazine had that famous frame from the Patterson-Gimlin film, and I was hooked. I dug into that thing, and I was like, I remember the feeling that just this chill running up my spine, like, holy crap, there's real monsters. And that totally sucked me in, and I've been interested ever since, you know, and really, like, over the last, probably like the last 5 years, I can't remember what kicked it off, but I kind of got back into it. You know what it was? I started finding podcasts because I sit in front of my computer sculpting all day. So I need, like, I put on TV shows, movies, and podcasts. Really keep me from peeling my friggin' face off when I'm doing the same stuff over and over and over, like for 16, 18 hours a day. So I started really finding, connecting with a lot of paranormal and crypto podcasts. and it got me really sucked in. And then I found this one book that really took me off my feet was Recasting Bigfoot by John Cazar. And theories were outside of anything anyone else was saying, but they made a lot of sense in terms of my personal beliefs about how potentially this type of a cryptic species could still be out there, what it might actually be like, the variations within it. And actually, if you look at the Skookum head that I put on the Sasquatch variant, that Skookum head is based off of John's theories in his book. You have to, because part of his theory kind of encompassed the idea that some of these creatures may actually be, have a correlation to great apes in terms of being a version of a monkey that had evolved into an ape. So
now
this
that's
one
the
is
image.
Actually,
I'm
going to
post that
monkey
image.
Head.
That's the image that you sent me that is unpainted, correct?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm
so
gonna,
it's actually a howler monkey head interpreted as in an ape form. And it makes sense if you look at it in terms of a howler monkey, what it does, how it looks, some of the early descriptions of the Skookum from native people, the fact that the animal whistles and howls, and you can even take that as far as looking at the native artwork on the totem poles and the masks.
Yep.
For the Sonoquah masks, where they're always
presented as
whistling or howling.
Yeah, they have the lips. Those totems actually have the lips similar to a howler monkey.
Yeah, and even John also pointed out the bony protrusion around the eyes. Like with the spider monkey has that almost an encircling orbit where instead of just a brow ridge, they have the bony edge going all the way around the eyes. There's interesting things he said about the facial anatomy and also the foot morphology that's shown between different types of Bigfoot tracks, going back to like the old Ruby Ridge tracks, which the relationship of the width of the heel and the spacing of the toes and things. Again, I'm paraphrasing. I've read the book probably three times. I found it very engrossing. I know it's sort of anathema to a lot of the traditionalists who believe, you know, the PGF is like the gold standard. That's exactly what they look like. But there's an awful lot of theories in this book that I think a lot of people would benefit from taking a look at.
But see,
that book really was the kickoff for me. And then I went back and reread all of John Green's stuff. John Napier's book that he wrote in the 70s. I'm currently reading Ivan Sanderson's The Abominable Snowman book right now. The irony is I go back to these books that are written in like the early 70s. There's almost no new data since
the
70s. These guys back then were talking about the Orang Pendek and all these different things about behaviors and stuff that people talk about now. But other than like some new tracks, and if you want to believe in things like the Skookum cast and stuff like that, whether that's valid or not valid, I'm sort of on the fence on that one myself. But
I am too.
Lot of fresh data in the last 40 years or so. That's the only thing that really disturbs me as far as validity. But it doesn't do anything to kind of trip up any belief I have in it, because I'm just nutty enough to believe in it, regardless of whether it's evidence.
Anyone who's done their homework and done the research, and this goes for any of the guys out in the field, I think we all kind of agreed that not all of them look like Patty in the Patterson Gimlin film. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think we're all in agreement. You know, if you do your homework and you do the research and you read all the various different reports, now could some of those be a little far fetched? Yeah, I'm not saying every report is 100% truthful or accurate. I can't tell you what is true and what isn't. You've got to kind of try to decipher that yourself. But I mean, even humans, they don't look the same in every area of the world. So it would make sense also that another hominid species would have variations in their characteristics as well, based on their terrain, based on their location, based on their diet even.
Yeah, Yeah, there's an awful lot of, like, again, there's an awful lot of projections you can make based on anecdotes and some of the ideas. But, you know, I think you have to look at indigenous species, indigenous people, and at great apes and monkeys, and you have enough information maybe to make some wild guesses. You know?
So
and
you...
Like I said, there's some people who probably had legitimate experiences, but unless you get a sighting, a track, a hair sample, and then video or photographic documentation, you need all those things sort of in conjunction to have something as being
right.
And
80% of the time, 80% of the time, the only thing you're going to get is audio. You know, you were a fan of monsters. I was also from watching King Kong and the Wolfman, and I mean, your story is very familiar to me. But how did you go from sculpting superheroes, Batman, Marvel characters? How did you make that jump to the cryptid and this particular action figure line that you have coming out in the fall?
Well, in terms of sculpting variety, I pretty much do whatever kind of comes down the pipeline. But in specific relation to this, I met Jeff through a friend of mine. And once I found out that Jeff was interested in doing a crypto line, I was basically hooked already. I had told my friend, I was like, look, just have him call me. I'm already interested. And because I've been trying to sell the idea of Bigfoot and Yeti and things like that, or a cryptozoology line in general, to a lot of different clients. And they're very kind of gun-shy to jump into something that's not attached to a popular film or a video game or a comic book. You know, they want a property that's well-known and driven by some sort of media. So something like this that's just sort of a pop culture phenomenon or oddity, there's not enough there for them to want to drop the kind of money it would take to put something like this into production. So when I found Jeff was definitely into it, and not
well,
just,
I mean, at the same time, they're just pencil pushers behind a desk. They don't actually
in producing it to make money, but interested in it genuinely as a topic. Then that's when we were able to actually start a dialogue about what we would do, and it sort of came from there. So I was already predisposed to want to do the line, and he brought the opportunity to me, and it just we kind of hit it off from the beginning because, you know, basically we started talking about it and realized we were both really geeked on the topic. You know,
yeah.
Whether we were actually making toys or not, we could sit around and talk about this stuff for hours on end.
Oh, yeah,
because
definitely.
He would be sending me to some same videos, like, every couple of days that I had just been watching, you know.
Well, you know, when I saw the images of your line, it was bittersweet for me, I'll have to say, because many of you guys know who've been listening, to me, people who know me, excuse me, know that I myself have been thinking about doing a cryptid line with what I do. Nowhere near the production level or quality of of what you guys got going on. But when I saw yours, I was like, hell yeah, finally somebody's doing it. You know, somebody's doing it. But at the same time, there was like, ah, shit, somebody beat me to it. But I still may do that on the 1/18 scale as opposed to the 7 or 9 inch scale that you're doing. Now, you did something that I saw. You sent me a picture of. It was for Lyle Blackburn. It was the Legend of Boggy Creek model kit.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that was
I
actually
fell in
one
love
of the early
that.
Things that. Yeah, that was fun for me too. Like that was one of the early things I did on the road to this crypto thing. It was this. My whole career has been this weird kind of series of synchronistic events, and the crypto thing no less so. Like I had just read Lyle's book. And I was on Facebook, and I was like, you know, I'm going to look for this dude. So I found him on Facebook, was checking out some of his stuff, and it turns out the dude's a total monster geek like I am. He has, like, a museum in his house and everything. So I sent him a message, and I was like, ah, what's the chance that this, you know, author guy's going to get back to me? So I sent him a message, and he wrote back, and we were, like, kind of sending pictures back and forth of our collection and stuff. And then, like, not too long after, he's like, hey, listen, man. He's like, how'd you feel about sculpting kind of a tie-in to my book so that I can, you know, he wanted to have some more merchandise for, like, when he does shows and stuff. So
me and
him kind of wrapped back and forth.
You're talking about Jeff Byers, right?
No. Right now I'm talking about Lyle.
Oh, okay, Lyle Blackburn.
This is
okay,
about, yeah, this is the Boggy Creek portion of our show. So me and him started talking about what it would look like, and he said, you know, what would be cool is take that original poster and then just fill in the blanks, because obviously the poster from Boggy Creek is just the silhouette of the creature running through the water.
Right.
So, you know, I matched the silhouette and then just kind of, you know, I explained to him, like, what my theories were about how much human there'd be in there, how much ape, and he's like, yeah, man, he's just run with it and make it kind of nappy and stuff, because the swamp apes are maybe a little more kind of dirty and rugged and rough on the edges, and did that for him. And then not too long after that was when I got in contact with Jeff. So that was sort of the first thing. I was like, I don't do too much as far as private commission stuff during the year because I just don't have time. And
right.
It's got to be something I'm really into if I'm even going to consider it. So that thing was like, oh, this is a perfect excuse to work on some sort of Bigfoot-oriented project. And that was sort of almost like the first domino to fall. Because not too long after that, it's a few months later, Jeff got in contact with me, and then it was kind of off to the races from there, and it just sort of steamrolled from the... And then when Jeff went out to the Horror Hound show in March, and that was really the first time we showed anything, and we started to kind of put together a web presence. Him and his friend built a website, put together the Creature Replica Facebook page, and it just exploded. And, I mean, I'm into this stuff, so... regardless of what it is, I'm going to be into it. But I really, you know, because I'm used to the usual toy kind of mentality that stuff like this just doesn't gain traction. But I guess because it's so prevalent now on TV and everything with all the shows we talked about,
now's the time. Now's,
it just
blew
my mind, you know.
Now's the perfect
time. Because I look at it and it's like, okay, I like the subject. I did the sculpture, so obviously I don't have an objective viewpoint on it. I'm already sucked in. But a lot of people were really enthusiastic, and I was just sort of, I don't want to say surprised, but I was sort of surprised. You know, me and Jeff had talked about it before. I was like, man, is this nuts for us to even consider doing this? Because it's so, you know, off the wall. And we both sort of agree. We're both probably a little nuts about it, but there seems to be a lot of other people that are just as,
topic. Let me tell you, I've been in the action figure world, excuse me, since at least 1995, and I've always loved Sasquatch, and I've always hated the renditions of Sasquatch action figures, and even some statues that have been on the market You know,
well,
and
when you think about it. Really been almost nothing as far as action figures. Like, Mez did a set of crypto figures. But, I mean,
right.
The only
they were pretty static.
Cool for what they were.
The Sasquatch, I didn't agree with the sculpt work on that, particularly the head and the face. But, yeah, that's what was there at the time. That's what was cool at the time. You know, it came with a little... Little Sasquatch plaster plaque thing.
Yeah, plaster cast, yeah.
But you know, I was so frustrated with it, and I showed you pictures earlier today. I actually went and customized my own because I was so frustrated that no one was jumping on this and taking it. And I also know that I'm sure I'm not the only one, whether they enjoy action figures, excuse me, or whether they're just Sasquatch enthusiasts. I'm sure that a lot of people are going to love the idea that there is a physical, a good representation, and a physical representation of something that they're into, or something that they enjoy, or something that they do in their for their particular hobby or even field. I'm sure that, you know, because you've got some people who are totally into Mothman. You've got some people who are totally into Lizardman, like Lyle. You've got so many different cryptids that certain groups of people just are really heavy into. And Sasquatch right now is at the forefront with the TV shows. So I think that this line is going to do really, really well, and I'm going to damn sure do everything I can to help make sure that happens. I think you picked a great time, because, you know, with all the Bigfoot on television, whether it be these documentaries are taking off, guys. You know, you've got Finding Bigfoot, you've got that Russian Yeti, Monster Quest, even though it's not on the air, that kind of kicked things off.
I love that show.
And then, I know I love it too, man. I wish they wouldn't have took it off the air. But, and you know, you got Les Stroud even getting into it.
The only thing about that one, I'm disappointed that kind of associated with, what's his name?
I love the Les Stroud part.
I thought that guy had been discarded like 4 years ago as being a hoaxer. A little disheartening.
You know,
but
I wouldn't put it past that guy to bring friends out there and have them camp out there and somehow signal them to know when he's in the area so they could, you know, I wouldn't put that past them at all.
Yeah, because I don't have a real high opinion of the typical tree break and tree twist stuff. I see a lot of stuff just out in the woods around my house. Is all just natural formation,
that's right.
Nature can do some crazy stuff, and I just don't buy it. What's the point? What's the point of an animal that size? Like, let's go to something like, remember on, you didn't watch that Bigfoot Bounty show, right?
The what?
There's this one point on the show, I'll describe it to you.
I didn't feel the need to watch it because I don't believe in the whole going out there and killing a damn Bigfoot. To me, it's why?
Well, they weren't. You know? That wasn't the point of the show, though. They were supposed to, I don't know what they were going to do if they found one, probably run screaming. But they would find things like tree structures that were like three trees with, say, like a 4 or 5 inch diameter that were like sort of, you know, crisscrossed. You know how those Blair Witchy kind of structures people find are? And the guy's sitting under it and is like, yeah, this would be comfortable. It'd be like useless. What is an animal that, say the animal's like 8 feet tall, he's going to sit under like 3 sticks?
No,
they don't look like gorilla net. They make no freaking sense.
Yeah, I think if anything, if they were to use, you know, I do believe that there are some tree structures that are Sasquatch related. I don't believe everything is Sasquatch related, excuse me, but I believe if they were to utilize it, it would be some type of a marker.
Marker thing makes some sense. You know, I know that I've read that like chimps will do things like that. They'll leave trail markers, things like that.
I know from being out in the woods, you know, it's easy to get turned around, and if there's no real any landmarks, any natural landmarks to base where you're at from, you know, yeah, it's easy for us because we'll go in from a highway or a road or something like that, so we know where that's at. But if these creatures are in the real thick forest, you know, miles away from any roads, I could see where that would be beneficial to them.
But
again, hey guys, you know, that's speculation. You know, if you guys have a different theory on it, call in, hit me up on Facebook, and we'll definitely discuss it. Now, Gene, let's get back to the action figures. You've described what's in the first wave. Is there any details you can give regarding future possible waves?
One hint I could drop on wave two is that we may be kind of going outside of this galaxy to plumb some ideas. there's a lot of things we wanted to do with the first wave. And as we've talked more and more, I think we put together probably a list of about 15 different creatures between pop up in waves 2 and 3.
And I know I've been sending pictures left and right of different creatures.
Yeah. Well, we put together our short list is probably 15 different possibilities for waves 2 and 3. One of them we're going to show in San Diego, looks like, and at Comic-Con in July. And we may be, so that's the clue. It's sort of a blatant clue, but, probably be going outside of this galaxy for whatever it is. So you can interpret that a lot of different ways, I guess. But so basically, we're leaving the line open to be, it could be any kind of cryptid or any kind of monster which we happen to feel fit into the line. And I can tell you that wave 2 is going to be a lot more diverse than wave 1. Basically, wave 1 is relic hominids and werewolves, so basically bipedal creatures with fur. Wave 2 is going to be a lot more diverse in terms of, let's say, skin textures and species and things like that.
So this is not strictly a cryptid line. This is actually going by the name creature replica. This is just different creatures.
Yeah, it'll be heavily weighted towards cryptids without a doubt. But you got to take a look at what actually is a cryptid in different parts of the world. Like even in the United States, we have a lot of things about dogmen and werewolves and things like that. So that brings supernatural creatures or potentially supernatural creatures like werewolves into it, even if you believe that they're sort of more of a dog analog to a Bigfoot, And
so
then you go into other countries, you go into the East, and there what could almost be considered cryptids in their folklore are vampires and living dead and zombies and things. So essentially, that opens it up where it could be anything. So when we do a wave of figures, it could be almost anything that'll pop up in that wave. I mean, we don't want to get sucked into doing what every company does that even tries to do it, and immediately they do Sasquatch. They do a blatant repaint of Sasquatch white to create a Yeti. They do a Mothman, and they do a Chupacabra and a Jersey Devil. Those guys are not going to hit our. They're going to be riding the bench for a little while because we don't want to jump in and do all the obvious stuff because there's too many other really interesting cryptids around the world
that
no one even talks about.
That brings up another point. You mentioned, and we've seen it happen before, guys. If you're into action figures, you know what I'm talking about. Toy Biz did it with their comic version of Sasquatch when they changed it to the Wendigo. Used the same body, just painted it white. Your Yeti is a completely different sculpt from your Sasquatch.
Yeah, we could have just repainted it, but one of the things when me and Jeff were having the discussion, basically our first lineup, I was developing the original four figures we were going to do all at the same time, pretty much. And
right.
It was a whole different wave before we put the Horror Hound into the mix. And so every time I sent Jeff an update, he would see like three of them in rough form, anatomically and proportionately, and that's where he was like, I really think the Yeti's got to be a lot bigger. So, from week to week, they're like, nah, I think he still needs to be bigger. So what we ended up with is the proportions to see here now where the Sasquatch is about 8 inches tall, and he looks really big compared to what a normal human figure would be in a line like this, say like a 7-inch figure. Like, go back to like a, say like a Spidey figure.
Well, I got
I
got a question. Can you do this for me in the next couple of days? Can you take a picture of your Sasquatch next to a figure that we may know?
Okay.
And I'll post that image to show that size difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, I'll do that. It'll give you an idea because the idea was that the Sasquatch would be proportionately correct to what they're supposed to be in terms of witness sightings, which, they generally average around 7-8 feet if you believe
right.
witness sightings. There's some people
right.
that say they've seen them as big as 12 feet, which sort of stretches my belief a little bit. But since we're already talking about an animal that there isn't proper documentation for, who knows? They could be 12 feet. They could be 15. But so we wanted him to relate to a 6-foot character, though he's 8 feet.
Yeah, I typically hold the bar at 8 feet. There could be some as large as 12 feet, but, I mean, do you really want an action figure that big? I mean, cut it in the middle, call it even, call it a day. And you mentioned also that the Yeti wasn't an exact interpretation of reports of Yeti. You know, that doesn't matter. You know, if people don't like it, to hell with them. It's a cool figure. That's what it boils down to. It's a cool-looking action figure. You know,
my concern with that one was that I don't think there's that many people, even in the field of interest, that realize that Yetis are almost never reported as white.
Right.
You know, they're not in the folklore or anything. That's a Hollywood creation. But
well, that begs the question.
That, you know, like I said, how do you sell something that looks like an orangutan? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, that begs the question: are you going to do a paint variant on your Yeti?
I thought about it in the beginning. It might be cool as a variation, but I don't know if it'd garner enough interest to bother. You know what I'm saying? It's just,
yeah.
Down the road, it would be cool to do, but I just can't see it really making sense. You know, we're going to do a variety of fur colors on the Sasquatch.
It might make it look a little too King Kong-ish.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we paint him a darker color, and all of a sudden he just sort of looks like a gorilla with a slightly slightly different style of face, you know? So, I mean, anything's possible, you know?
Okay.
But I'd rather go ahead and do something totally different than keep addressing the same creature over and over
when we sort of
hit something that we like on that one. The Sasquatch is sort of he's the basis for the whole line, so we'll be bound to do a lot more with that one, especially when we start getting into variations on that, like we do
we've got 30 minutes left on air. Now we can continue over in the archive for another hour, but actually on air we got 30 minutes left. So what I want to do is I got a couple of questions that I'm going to ask. That if I don't, I feel like the listeners will be kind of let down. And then, you know, we'll open the lines. If anybody wants to call in, you can call in. First question, obviously, Patty from the Patterson-Gimlin film, are you planning to do a female Sasquatch similar to Patty?
It's something we talked about. I think probably at some point we'll have to do a representation of that, you know, and we'd like to. Again, it's kind of getting the first line out and done, and then we can do variations, you know, ad infinitum, you know. So I would think at some point we'll be sort of honor-bound to do it. It's sort of the most important representation of the creature.
I think that particular one will be a huge seller for you. Also, my next question. I just posted the pictures of the Boggy Creek model kit, so everyone who's seen it knows what I'm talking about. Do you plan on making a figure of that? An action figure?
Again, that's probably one of the most important versions of a Bigfoot-type creature, aside from Patty's. I'd say down the road, I'd have to say the Falk Monster's got to be in there somewhere, probably sooner rather than later.
I have particular interest in that, and I'll tell you why. Most of the regular listeners probably know already. I'm going to be in a movie, hopefully within the next year, playing a Sasquatch. And looking at your model resin kit, the body structure of it is pretty much my body structure, tall and slender. And so I have a lot of interest in that particular sculpt. And I think it would make an awesome action figure. I know I'd be all over it. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners, because as soon as I posted the pictures, it got a lot of likes. So I'm sure a lot of those guys would be into it. And see, to me, that particular body style is more representative of the southern Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. You know, and the heavier you are in a swamp, you know, you're going to sink down, you're going to get snagged, you won't be able to go through that thick brush, whereas in the mountainous region, it just makes sense for them to look that the way they do, as opposed mm-hmm. to down here. Even the reports of some having three toes, to me, that kind of makes sense, too. I watched, I think it was Jeff Meldrum. I don't remember the exact show, but he was showing the cast of the three toes and how it had webbing in between them. That makes sense for a swamp creature.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's the difference is, to me, it's similar to walking in the snow with your regular bare feet as opposed to walking in the snow with a snowshoe. It's the same concept mm-hmm. that those three toes and that flayed out the web would give it better support and, you know, better mobility as opposed to just a regular foot like what we have. Yeah, I mean, look at ducks, you know, for example. I'm trying to think of other animals right now. Storks, things of that nature. They walk through that mud like an alligator, you know. Like it's nothing to it. Whereas we try to go through that and we're sinking and slipping and sliding and this and that. So to me, it all makes sense to me on a biological level, if you will, of what that animal would need and how that animal would need to be to survive in that particular environment.
Right.
But again,
yeah, I think the only problem with the three-toed thing is there are no examples in primates of three toes. And you'd think if you project sort of anatomically, a large creature would tend to need more toes because it would give you more ability to work over uneven terrain because your toes are actually kind of redistributing your weight. But
that's right.
But again, you know, it's all speculation. It would depend
but
on the proportion of the toes to the foot. And
I've
how
got
the foot is constructed.
I've got to, and I don't mean any offense in this at all, but I've got to kind of correct you on that. There is history of humans having webbed feet and webbed hands, particularly Down syndrome children and people. So could it be?
Could it be some inbred? Yeah, I would think probably more of an inbred thing. You got to figure that these creatures would be in smaller populations.
That's right.
And there would be a certain amount of inbreeding in the smaller population. Even though you look at the existing communities of gorillas that are left are very small. They're smaller, actually, than some people say are necessary for to have a healthy breeding population, but what's happened is those communities, I don't know whether you call it an evolution thing or whatever it is, they've adapted to be able to survive within a very shallow gene pool. And it could be with these creatures too, but within that shallow gene pool,
there's a lot of forest out there. You know, it's not like they have a SasquatchEHarmony.com, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you pretty much, you know, you something comes along, you pretty much got to take it, you know, whether it's looking through rose-colored glasses or what, you know, something comes along, you got to jump on it.
But, yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting once one of these things is actually captured or bagged one way or another, where they can start to actually look at them and really study them seriously and scientifically, you know, so that we can see just how much of this wild-ass speculation is actually accurate. Because
right now,
with the little bit of data that everyone has, we're writing the Lord of the Rings for Bigfoot creatures. It's all, until there's actually something solid, it's all just wild speculation.
That's right.
Based on footprints and sightings, which, you know, some I'm sure are true, some of them, I think, are probably totally made up.
And that's the thing.
You can kind of tell by the quality of the story.
That's the thing to remember about this action figure line, is you're not trying, You know, and guys, let's put this out. You're not trying to make a truly biological representation of a Sasquatch, because for one, you've never seen a Sasquatch. There's very few references for Sasquatch other than, you know, reports, which could be fabricated. So you're basically giving your interpretation based on the reports, based on the very few images that may be out there, and also based on what you know about other primates and hominid species.
My approach was to take a look at, you know, the apes that exist today and look at pre-human ancestors and, you know, the speculative reconstructions of pre-human ancestors and take elements of those things and sort of combine them in and just add some of my own opinion into it. Because, like you said, there's no photographs of this thing other than, you know, we used a certain amount of proportional information from the Patty film. But even that, there's nothing nailing that down as 100% true or false. You can't really argue it solidly either way to 100% because there's just not enough definitive information in the film or about the film. You know, like we talked about earlier, I just recently had read that paper that Bill Munns put together on Jeff Meldrum's Relic Hominid Inquiry about the visible anatomy in the back, some of the attachment points of, like, you can see the hip flexor muscle in the upper thigh. You can see you can kind of see the crease where the pectoral muscle goes into the shoulder, into the deltoid. There was always aspects of the rear view of that creature as it's walking away from the camera where you could pick out every muscle group in that back. The rhomboid muscles in the center. You can see the lat. You can see everything, the trapezoid muscles. And as that thing walks, that back was always the thing that made me think that there was a possibility that it was real, because it always struck me as just an ape suit. But that muscle structure in the back, I mean, I work with anatomy every day of the whole year. And I've done one of my previous careers, I worked as a butcher, so I dismantled a lot of animals. So I am intimately associated with all sorts of anatomy and things. And that's the thing that struck me. And Bill did a really in-depth analysis of that film in relation to anatomy and all different things. You have to take a look at, anybody who's interested, take a look at the YouTube film of his talk that he gave at the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy Convention. I think it was the year before last. And it'll blow your mind. Unless you're a skeptic with a capital S, you know, from the Church of Skeptic that, you know, pretty much ignores any actual data, it'll blow your mind. If you were on the fence,
you know,
like I was about this, then it'll change your mind.
I think what it is you have a certain amount of the human population that is arrogant, of course, and egotistical, and wants to think that we are the be-all, end-all that there is, that there's, you know, that there's no more mysteries left in the universe. And sadly, for them, as we go along, through the years, through the technological advances, we're finding out that that's just not true. I mean, those who have seen, we know. You know, that you can sit here all day and argue and be skeptical all you want. It's not going to matter. We know what we've seen. So you know, and. The thing that I tell, you know, most skeptics is, do you even go out in the woods at night? Do you ever get off your couch or off your computer and actually physically research the possibility of a Sasquatch? And 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. And you know, it's you just you know, get out there. I wouldn't advise going alone, depending on the area, and depending on the area, I wouldn't advise going unarmed. And take a, you know, take a group of friends with you or whatever, and just go out there and just sit. Don't do all this stupid ass howling and yelling and screaming and shit that you see on the television. Don't do that. Take it from me. Don't do that. You won't get any kind. They'll shut up. Maybe in Washington State or Oregon that works because of their location and because of the mountainous region. But typically any flatlands or whatever, don't do that. It doesn't work. Trust me, I put it to the test. And I've talked to many others who have. But, you know, just get out there, go out there and just sit and listen. And you'll be pretty surprised, you know. You just got to find and Gene, man, let me tell you something. If you ever get down, holy crap, my cat just scared the shit out of me. If you get down, I'm sitting on the porch and a cat came walking down the handrail and all I saw was something black out the corner of my eye. But if you ever get down this way, man, let me know. I'll be more than happy to take you out there with me.
Yeah, and I think it's inevitable at some point that I'll end up in the woods
and
on some sort of expedition.
I can't promise you that you'll see anything, but I can pretty much promise you that you'll hear something that'll make you go, "What the hell was that?" And
yeah, well, you know, I don't need proof to believe in it, but I'd certainly love to have some.
Oh, I know you're a believer. I know you're not a skeptic, but I'm just saying I would, you know, you mentioned earlier about how you would love to see and have some kind of, you know, for yourself. And I mean, that's at this point in time, that's about all I can offer, man. I'd love to get you down here and you know, take you out there and let you listen and experience it for yourself. Listeners, we have about 18 minutes left. If you guys want to call in, call in. As long as you call in while we're still on the air, you'll be able to talk even into the archive segment. So go ahead, call in. I'll open the lines. The number is 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. Gene and I, we're gonna continue talking. You guys, if you want to call in, call in. I'll bring you on. But, you know, Gene, I've expressed this many times to you before, and, I mean, I am really, really stoked about this action figure line.
Yeah, you and me both, buddy.
And I really think that a lot of Bigfoot researchers are going to want it because, you know, that's the thing. People want something that they can show and something that they can collect and something that they could put on their mantle or their entertainment center to show what they do, you know, what it is they actually do. You know, I know people, I've got a friend who does other sculptures. He you know, he does busts and things of that nature and little necklaces. And from what he's told me, he does really well with it. His name is Jason. Jason Shanaman, I hope I pronounced the last name correctly. And
I've seen his sculpts. They look cool.
Yeah, I've mentioned him before, and you know, even hanging from the rearview mirror, I can see people, you know, maybe not an action figure, maybe not a, you know, 8-9 inch action figure, but something along those lines, just to represent what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know I'll be all over it, you know. Let's talk a little bit about the Horror Hound. Now, that is not an actual cryptid, correct?
No. That's basically, that was when Jeff first started to kind of develop this idea, he had become friends with the guys that run the magazine, and he got the idea that it would be really cool to develop a figure based around their mythological creature that they used to represent the magazine. And they had kind of written a backstory and stuff like that to kind of give this creature like its own sort of mythology and everything. And initially, he was going to sort of be a kind of a side project. And then as we started to look at really the nuts and bolts of what we would take to produce the line, we decided to stick them in the line officially. And they kind of put together a backstory. I don't know, have you been to our regular site and read any of the little backstory things that we put up there?
No, I don't think so. Send me the link, if you will, and I'll post it. I can run through the
blurb for you so you can get an idea of the history behind the Horror Hound, because he's sort of a created Ohio cryptid. So what we have in the blurb here, which came right from the guys at Horror Hound, was that he was a young American soldier named Harold Warren, infiltrates Nazi Germany in 1944 with a secret mission to assassinate the Führer, Adolf Hitler. The Second World War seems to be coming to a close thanks to the Allied forces, while Hitler's Germany became increasingly desperate as they turned to the occult and bizarre experiments as a last-ditch effort to win the war. The ill-fated U.S. trooper's mission is a failure as he is captured by the SS officers deep behind enemy lines. Now in the hands of several diabolical Nazi doctors, he is subjected to sadistic medical and occult experimentation before he succumbs to several treatments, surgeries, and mutations intended to transform him into a supernatural killing machine. Soon after Harold's death, his body is discovered and retrieved by U.S. Army officers, found stitched together, mutilated, and strapped to a table within the bombed-out underground laboratory. His butchered body is shipped home for study, however, soon disappears from the infamous Wright-Patterson Air Force Base upon the first full moon. For decades since, sightings of a large mutilated dog-like zombie creature have been reported miles away into the Mount Airy Forest area of Hamilton, Ohio. A believed haunted part of Mount Airy known as the Twin Tunnels has played host to the largest amount of reported sightings, as well as twisty stretches of road known as the Devil's Backbone. Could this creature be the lost soldier himself transformed? Could the Nazi experiments have worked? One thing is known for sure. The Cincinnati area is home to the infamous creature known as the Horror Hound. Pray you never cross his path, for it might be the last thing you do. So that's the official blurb from Horror Hound, giving the creature his own history. So
that's
he's
awesome.
A created creature, but obviously within the United States, there's the Michigan Dogman, there's a few other cryptocanids also. So he sort of fits within that.
And that's kind of the point we're trying to get across, guys, is that this is just really cool creatures, and really cool action figures. Gene, what you read was from the website creaturereplica.com, correct?
Right, yeah. There's a little blurb on all the creatures we got up there so far.
And guys, what you're going to do is if you go to that website, you're going to click up top, little purple icon that says current action figures. It'll bring up all the action figures, and if you hover over their images, it'll give you the little brief summary of them, and you can click more, and it'll take you to a page with images of them and the blurbs as well.
Yeah, and you can pop these pictures open pretty friggin' big, too, so you can really see the detail on them. It's pretty cool.
And see, that's what I like is, not usually when we're looking at any kind of action figure images, Toy Fair or whatever, it's always these little tiny images that you can't really enlarge, you can't see a lot of detail, and you really don't know what the hell you're getting until you buy it, mm-hmm. And that's what I like about what you guys are doing I'm not the normal, I've seen other pictures of them fully 360 degrees, and I'm going to be doing some work with that and making some cool images and stuff like I've been doing and bringing that to the forefront and letting you guys get those images as well. But believe me, there's a lot of coolness to these figures, a lot of detail, that I'm really impressed with. And if you guys...
Well, I'm glad you like it. A lot of people have had a similar response to it, and we're always looking to, as we move forward, we want to improve on what we already have, too. We're pretty happy with the way the first line is looking right now, but there's an awful lot we can do to go further with them, too. you know, maybe a different, you know, experiment more with types of articulation, or just, you know, even just within the type of creatures, finding different ways to represent fur, you know, so that they don't all look the same, you know, more sparse or heavier fur patterns, different styles of how the fur is done. I mean, there's a lot of things to do within it, you know, so we're always going to be looking for ways to keep it from getting played out, you know.
Well, I'm looking at the images of the Sasquatch, and what I like is the fact that the arms, the length of the arms in relativity, excuse me, to the actual legs and the kneecap, I think is spot on. You know, their arms are really, really long, really hung low, and even though he's in a leaning position, I'm looking at an image from side, and guys, I'll post it in the next couple of days. I'll do some work on it. I'll post it eventually. But, you know, his arm is bent, but if I was to straighten that arm out, it would easily reach right at the bottom of the thigh muscle.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, a lot of this stuff is based off of, you know, like I said, I read an awful lot about this, and I am conscious of the discussions about the intermembral index. Difference between these creatures and, you know, the average human kind of arm to leg length, things like that. And I want that to be represented in them. You know, there are things like that that we're paying attention to as we create these, rather than just sort of, like most companies that take it, they just hand the idea to a designer and he just pulls something out of his butt. That's not what we're doing. You know, we're basing everything on current data, such as it is, you know, whether speculative or whatever. That's really we want it to look as close as we can without having one sitting in front of it, you know.
And it's like, you know, we talked earlier today, and guys, we actually talked for probably about 3 hours today already. But, you know, looking at the images and the sculpt work, you know, it's like I told you earlier, man, I can tell that you really put the time in and did your homework and did some research and on these characters.
Well, you can look at this as you see more and more of the creatures. Like, you can even look at take a look at the Yeti in some of the bigger pictures on our site. If you can see, like, a shot of the feet and some of the full body shots, what I actually did is I took a picture of the Shifton cast, the Shifton footprint from that Yeti expedition, and
right.
I tried to reproduce a foot that would match something that would have made that imprint, which would mean, you know, the bifurcated toe, what do they call it, the offset big toe up at, for the thumb in that type of foot. And then how in that particular one, it looks like he has almost like a forefinger and then three smaller toes. So that's
right.
The way I designed the feet to ostensibly match that Shifton print. So there's things like that that we're doing specifically to match what we consider known information about these various creatures. You know,
now,
even as you look at, if you look at the hands of the Sasquatch, they're humanish hands, but the proportions to the hands are somewhere between, they're closer to a person, but they're somewhere in between an ape and a person. The length
right.
of the fingers is a little different, the breadth of the hand span, but it has a humanish look. So there's things that we're very conscious of in terms of how we want to represent the creatures, and also in terms of the Sasquatch's anatomy. These guys are represented most of the time in most of the anecdotes of being built like football players, just massive, rippling, muscular figures.
Which brings up another subject regarding anatomy, and I'm sure the people who are listening, people who are looking at the image, are going to ask the same question. You elected, and I think it was a smart idea, you elected to not give what we in the field call a mid-torso articulation, which is the rib cage
mm-hmm.
articulation, on the Sasquatch as opposed to the Yeti. You and I discussed this before. If you could, real quick, because we've got like 7 minutes, explain why you did that.
Well, I originally had that articulation point in there on him as I had on all the other ones, and the problem with it was it's having that break, which essentially came beneath the ribcage in the front and curled down underneath where the lats were on the side of the body, it was still giving the creature too much of that kind of weightlifter V look. And it didn't, it took away from, we wanted to have a certain amount of the Patterson type proportions to the creature. You know, the big saggy kind of, you know, dirty diaper look with the butt and then the, just the thick blocky torso. And as much as I kept revising that transition between that joint, between like the abdomen and the rib cage, it just didn't have that look. So I just decided, let's just eliminate it altogether just to get that blocky torso look. And as soon as I did that, that solved the problem. So there's going to be times when we're going to make aesthetic decisions that trump any kind of functional decision. And there will be times when a function of an articulation point is going to trump any kind of aesthetics. But in this particular instance, the way we wanted to represent him was much more important than having that extra point of movement there. But in general, I like that. In general, I really like that rib, underneath the rib cage cut on figures. But in this particular instance, it wasn't workable for the way we wanted him to look.
Well, here's another from my stance, you know, I sculpt as well. Sasquatch are generally described as being hunched over and having very little neck anyway. So if you were to give him a mid-torso articulation, he'd be standing straight up, and it would completely take away from the sculpt work that you did, even on the back. And it would take away from his true reported posture.
Yeah, so his torso is really sculpted in a permanent hunch, kind of. You know, his torso is leaning forward. You know, because I wanted to give him enough of that kind of primate-ish kind of hunch with the big, you know, big trap muscles coming up almost equal to the height of the ear, almost like you would have in a gorilla. And a lot of the reports of this creature is that they can't really turn their head all that easily. A lot like a gorilla, they'll kind of turn their whole torso, you know, because their head is very, their neck length is very short compared to the size of their traps. So, you know, I wanted to represent that in it too. There is a little bit of, when you look at the profile of the sculpt, you can see there's a little negative space there between like where the chin is and where the body is. So there's room for the head to pivot on a ball joint there. But there's not a ton of room, and he's not going to have a ton of movement there because I want to represent him accurately, or reasonably accurate.
Right. If you want to see what we're talking about, go to www.creaturereplica.com, click on Sasquatch, bring up the images, and there's some side shots and a back shot. And man, I'm looking at this back shot, Gene, and the buttocks are almost identical to what is seen in the Patterson Gimlin film. All these figures come with a base, correct? I want to get that out before we got about 1 minute before we go off air.
They're all going to come with a base that reflects the type of environment they're typically found in. So the Sasquatch comes in a woodland base. The Yeti comes on a base that looks like it's made out of ice and snow. And the werewolves will probably come on sort of a woodland base as well.
That's awesome. We got 90 seconds left on air. Guys, if you want to call in, now's the time to do it because we're going to go off air, and we might continue into the archive a little bit, depending on Gene. Gene's an hour ahead of us, so it's a little bit later for him than it is for me. But if you want to call in, you better call in now. The number is 323-580-5703, and we'll take your call and answer, you know, any questions, of course, in the archive. But 323-580-5703, that's the number. Gene, man, it's been great having you, and we can continue talking if you like into the archive. But while I'm on air, I want to go ahead and give my appreciation and tell you how glad I am to have you on here.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about our toy line, and also just to wrap about Bigfoot and cryptids. I mean, I'd love to talk about this stuff.
Oh, man, let me tell you, you know, you and I, we've talked before. You're welcome more anytime you want to come back and, you know, just shoot the shit. Or you know, I'll be helping as much as I can to promote this line. So I'll definitely have you back on.
Yeah, it'd be cool, too, like when we're a little further down the road, get both of us on, me and Jeff both, and then we can kind of tag team all the issues you talked about, too.
Yeah, and, definitely.
Get his perspective on it as well.
Definitely, man. You know, I messaged Jeff earlier tonight after we first started the show and told him he can call in, too, if he wanted to. I don't know if he actually saw that message or not, but, yeah, man,
yeah,
for real.
Yeah, I sent it to him. I sent it to him, too. I know he's listening.
Well, not anymore because we're not on air, but, yeah.
Right, yeah.
For real, though, man, get him on. Now it's you two. And whose creature replica is that? Someone else entirely, or is that you guys?
No, that's us. That's
okay.
That's basically the name of the toy company that we're building. So
I gotcha.
Creature replica is the toy company.
So the line's not going to go through like Mattel or Hasbro or it's gonna
no.
actually go through under your guy's name. And one thing, you know, and I'm sure people will go back and listen to the archive, I hope. We'll go ahead and talk about it now, but we can also talk about that again on a future show. Where do you hope that people will be able to find these figures?
Well, almost definitely in comic stores, and depending on what kind of distribution deal we've got, possibly in bigger retailers. We're really hoping for that. But
right.
In definitely comic stores and online. We've already had a lot of interest from online retailers. So now it's just a matter of figuring out what is going to be a good overall pipeline for getting out the stuff in mass.
Now, are you guys planning on doing it an Amazon store or selling it directly through your website?
It'd probably be a combination of all of the above. If we put something together with a particular with a particular distributor and they want a certain amount of control over how the stuff is sold and what's sold and where, then we'll be cutting a specific deal with them to possibly control how everything's put out and carving
right.
out a little niche of it for ourselves for shows and for our own kind of online deals and things like that, you know. There's
now
a lot
you guys,
of different places that we're interested in distributing, but we're trying to find what's the biggest distribution deal so that we can put in the biggest factory order, you know, because that brings down our overall production cost, you know.
Now, you guys were at Toy Fair this year, right? And as always, I always look at as many of the toys as I possibly can. I did not see images until you sent them to me of your merchandise.
No, we weren't at Toy Fair this year.
Oh, okay.
Initially, we had planned to show at Toy Fair, but changed our mind like a few weeks out. We decided to hold off until after Toy Fair, and then when we knew, especially once we knew the Horror Hound was going to be an important character in the main line, we decided to hold off until the Horror Hound convention in March and debut it there.
Now, you guys are going to be at the San Diego Comic-Con, right?
Yeah, that's the plan. The next actual physical showing of the prototypes is going to be in San Diego. And then there's a number of shows after that. We might do some more horror shows. We might do some more Bigfoot conventions. Jeff went out to the Ohio Bigfoot convention a few weeks ago and showed the stuff there.
That's where I first saw the images was on their Facebook page.
He's been very into it since we first started showing it. So he let us know that if we wanted to show at that convention, that we could set up on his table. So that's what we did. So we may do more stuff like that, more of those type of conventions. And, you know, like I said, San Diego is a great one because basically you got like 120,000, 150,000 people going through that place over that three-day span.
Yeah.
So that'll be the biggest opportunity to show our stuff to as many people as possible.
When is the actual San Diego Comic Con? I'm thinking it's...
It starts around the... goes from the July 23rd to July 25th.
Yeah.
So that'll be... That'll be pretty much the next time, probably, where... Well, we're going to show... We still have the last creature to show. We haven't shown the Skookum painted, and we haven't shown the second Bigfoot repaint, which has a new head. So we have a few more things to reveal before San Diego, and in San Diego, we're going to reveal something new that will be something from Wave 2.
Sweet.
We have an
That's
idea
not
of which
bad.
One, but we just haven't really completely settled on which one we're going to show yet.
Sweet, and man, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, so as it looks right now, we're going to show at the Diamond Comics distributors booth in San Diego. And obviously, I have a long-standing association with Diamond. I developed, like, a lot of properties for them. And
right.
So they were the first organization I thought of in terms of potential distribution when we talked about it. So we'll see how things shake out with the possibilities with that, and you know how that's going to affect our production numbers and production schedule and things like that. But as far as everything goes right now, we're still on track to release in December sometime.
That's awesome. I can't wait. I'll tell you what. And listen, you know, I know that the San Diego Comic-Con, it runs, I want to say, from Wednesday through the weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, preview night is Wednesday, and then it runs through Sunday.
Well, I'll tell you what, and this is completely up to you guys. If you want to call in that Thursday night, we can do a show with you guys live at the Comic-Con.
Oh, that would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys want to call in, I can arrange that for sure. That's no problem. Anytime you guys want to come back on, just let me know. And you and I are going to be in touch, of course, this whole time. And guys who are going to be listening to the archive, I'm going to be doing the images with these figures and any news that I get from Gene, I'll be you know putting it out there direct to you guys, and Gene is on he's on my friend list. He's in my Onyx Knights paranormal cryptid group. He's on the regular Onyx Knights paranormal group. You know, feel free, if you got any questions, feel free to just hit him up. Is that okay with you, Gene?
Yeah, I'm really accessible. You can find me on Facebook through my personal page, through Creature Replica, through my studio page, which is, you know, under my name also. And my DeviantArt page is Black Plague 1348. So you can find me really easy on the internet. If you Google my studio name or my name, you'll find me really fast.
Yeah, and guys, I posted I didn't post your personal Facebook because first of all, I wanted to make sure that was cool with you. But they can find you through the groups anyway.
Yeah.
But I posted a lot of images while we were on the radio show. I posted a lot of links to the creaturereplica.com. I posted the link to your DeviantArt page as well. I hope that's okay, where
mm-hmm.
everyone can go in and look at all your other work. And, Gene, you and I talked today, and I know I've said this a million times, but man, I am really, really, really excited about these action figures. It's something that I've wanted and looked forward to for a long, long time, and I'm glad somebody is finally doing it. I'm glad that you and I are friends, that I can actually be on the inside of what's going on with it, and I am just so stoked about these figures, man.
Yeah, I was excited with it to begin with, but the fact that so many people like you are very intensely interested makes me feel like it's not such a crazy idea.
Well, you and I were talking, before the show today, and I'd mentioned to you about, creative funks that I seem to have an issue. I get into them, and it's like I want to do something so badly, and I can't, and I don't know what to do or where to start. But in all honesty, man, since you and I first started talking, and since I've looked at these images, it's kind of sparked that creativity in me again, and more so, it's got my mind becoming more imaginative. Now, it's sad because, I seem to think that we lose it when we age. Because when I was a kid, man, I can come up with some wild-ass shit. And I think that real life just kind of comes in and takes over, But, since you and I started talking and me seeing your work and especially the work with this line, it's kind of got my creative juices flowing. And, I'm really wanting to delve into this realm also, but also I like fantasy stuff, like knights and dragons and for example, one of the and I told you this earlier, one of the games that I play all the time is Skyrim, the Elder Scrolls Skyrim, and those also, the Elder Scrolls, the Oblivion game. Those are some awesome games. They've got some great characters. They've got some great graphics. And that's kind of, I love that. And I would love to see something similar. I know that it'd be really hard to get the rights to Skyrim, but I'd love to see something similar on a fantasy-based level. But something different. Something different that hasn't already been done, like we don't want the Warcraft type stuff, just something more grungy, if you understand what I'm saying. If you get a chance, do a Google search for images for Skyrim, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about, if you're not familiar with it already.
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with Skyrim. I'm not really into video games, so I'll see a whole bunch of stuff that looks cool, but because I don't play video games, it just sort of all kind of passes over me, Stuff like that, if I get contracted to do a character, then I get into it and I, read up on it. But, I don't know one game from the other, to be honest, in a lot of cases. It's all kind of the same, but I tend to like fantasy-based stuff a lot more myself, rather than I'd like something more like Warcraft more than I would something like Halo. I don't really like the designs of Halo armor and things like that. So I'm definitely more into the more medieval, fantasy medieval type stuff. If I had an opportunity to do something like that, I really like doing medieval armor too.
That's
one of my
other
trips.
That's what I'm talking about, man. But that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I got a chance to develop a lot of stuff like that at McFarlane. I did a couple of the medieval spawns for them, and there was a lot of there was a lot of creative freedom. So I was able to kind of develop some stuff around armor for some of those characters and things. I'd love to do something like that where I could just go off on armor also.
I got a question.
The creature replica thing is a stepping stone. Maybe it could take us into some other areas.
I got a question for you, actually, from Jeff. He's messaged me on Facebook. He wants to know what figure – he wants to take an image for reference. He wants to know what figure do you want him to put next to Sasquatch for the scale reference.
Oh, I don't know what he has handy.
I'm asking him if he has the NECA Dutch figure.
He might be almost the same size. That might be kind of a big figure. I don't know how big the... I have no idea how big that figure is. I'm not familiar with that line, really. I don't have it in front of me.
I want to say he's right at 6, 6.5. Whereas the Predator is closer to, the Predator is closer to 8.
Yeah, so it'd probably be almost the same ratio then, you know. But yeah,
Now,
like
I know
basically
that the, yeah,
any
I know that
normal
Nick,
human character next to him would give you a sense of the scale.
yeah, NECA's alien figure is right at 9 inch, and the Predator figure is just a slightly smaller than the alien. So I'm thinking the Predator's about 8.5, maybe 8. But he says he doesn't have anything there. He'll have to grab something from the net real quick. So I don't know. I don't know what that means exactly, but.
Oh, he's probably going to grab a picture and size it and scale it against the Sasquatch.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Chop it. I see what you're saying. But, you know, there's so much potential. I mean, there's so many different cryptids. I mean, hell, all you have to do is watch that show, Mountain Monsters. You know, they have something different on every damn week. But there's so many different cryptids, and keep in mind, my opinion is a lot of it is misidentified. For example, the dog man, I think maybe a misidentified Sasquatch. I think it's because in the heat of the moment with that adrenaline, believe me, because I've had that. I told you about that roar that happened about 50 yards from us. Now, if I was a C one that close to be able to give details, like some of these people do, I think that in that heat of that moment, that adrenaline rush can skew much of the observation. So
I would agree. You know, people see things, and people are not good at judging heights, and
that's
they're
right.
Certainly not good at judging weight. You know, unless you have a, you know, the sightings I like the best is when someone makes a guess at how tall something is, and they go and they're able to measure up to a certain tree branch they saw it standing next to, and give an actual, okay, well, it went up to this tree branch, so it had to be like 8 feet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If someone's just telling you, oh, this thing had to be 15 feet tall, you know, I mean, most people don't
have a sense of
just how big 15 feet would be.
Here's the fucked up thing about that, okay? Unless you're right there, real close to it, you can't tell if it's in front of that branch by about 10 feet, or if it's behind that branch by about 10 feet. To make it, you know, you can't tell if it's the angle that you're looking at. You see what I'm saying? You could get a lot of force perspective from the casual.
Well, it's like when trophy hunters take pictures of like a deer or a hog or something,
yeah,
and they stick behind it so it looks even bigger, you know,
mm-hmm.
or like fish, and they hold the fish out so it looks like it's a lot bigger. I mean, it's the same type of thing.
There was something going around recently regarding a rattlesnake image, and the guy's holding it out, and they're trying to claim that the snake was 9 foot, 6 inches, and actually it was only 6 foot. But because of the way he was angling it towards the camera. And I think that even if we were to get a good picture, you'd still have that come into play. I mean, even the Patterson-Gimlin film, they still have a hard time trying to guess exactly how big she is.
Yeah, the problem with that is they need to know the distance to that spot from the camera. They got to know the camera lens. They need to know the film speed.
Yeah,
there's a lot of data that they have to have, and I don't think they have every bit of that information. You know, I don't know if they're sure about exactly what the film speed was. You know, they know most of it. They know the type of camera and certain things, but they're not sure what the camera setting was.
Well, I mean, it was said that it was filmed with an 8mm, and come to find out it was some different type of camera. He has a WWE Ryback figure. Yeah, that'll work. I think that'll work.
Yeah, that should be an average 7-inch figure.
Because most collectors know how big those wrestling figures are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, even what we were talking about with the Patterson thing, even all this calculation, even that's not 100% accurate. You know, because the only way to get 100% accurate is to be there after the creature walked away, after it was filmed, and go there and take your measurements right then, right there.
Right.
You know, anything else, it's going to have a margin for error. You know, especially now, what, 60 years from when it all happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, and especially even that, there's a lot of speculation in terms of what those measurements are and things. I mean, it's just, I think your best bet is you look at the proportion. You know, like one of the things is you're talking about before, like arm length. You look at what they call that intermembral index and the length of the arm next to the leg. But even in terms of that, if the guy's stooping a little, then the arm's going to look longer in terms of the perspective and where it is next to the leg. So there's even some of that there, you know. But
well, I've read reports and seen a couple of shows where the arms on a Sasquatch in relativity to the legs was comparable to that of a gibbon.
Mm-hmm. And they have super long arms.
Yeah. Which the image you did, the model kit that you did of the Boggy Creek, I think that is a real good representation.
Well, I made a point to make the forearms particularly long on that too, you know, just for that reason, you know, because I tried to figure out ways to bring more of the primate aspect, well, more of the ape aspect into it and bring it further away from just being a muscular guy with fur, you know. So it was kind of splitting the difference, you know. I even made the palm of the hand slightly longer than a person's would be proportionally to the finger.
Yeah,
length,
the fingers look longer also. I have a question. I have a question regarding that sculpt and the Sasquatch sculpt as well. But I'll ask I'll ask it when we're off there. I'll, you know, give you a call or something like that. But you know, man, dude, man, this has been an awesome show. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. And
I love talking about this stuff. And this is the first interview. I've done a lot of friggin' podcast interviews. This is the first one where I've actually been able to talk extensively about Bigfoot. I talk a lot about toys, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Even I've done a couple other Bigfoot shows, and they asked me about toys. You know. Oh, the other show that I did recently was called 40 and Slip. Christopher York is one of the guys, and Matt Oklahoma K Sasquatch, something like that, is his handle.
I don't think I've heard it.
I mean, it's a pretty good show. It kind of covers everything paranormal and Bigfoot and things like that, the YouTube thing. But and those guys were, you know, like you and me, they're geeked on toys too. So they really wanted to talk about Marvel figures and all that stuff. So the conversation veered away from Sasquatch pretty fast.
Oh, man, I'll talk about Sasquatch all night long if I had to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this figure line is kind of centered around. You know, that's your lead character in this first wave. You know, that's what you're coming out the gate mm-hmm. with. That's your flagship character. So, you know, it just makes sense. You know, and besides, you know, the Marvel stuff, that's already out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People can find that easily. They already know about that. This is what's coming. This is the
right.
Big news.
Yeah, and to be honest, if this project was any other subject matter, it wouldn't have drawn me into it. The single thing that brought me into this was the opportunity to do these Sasquatch figures. That's the main thing. even if it was a crypto thing, it might have sucked me in general. But the fact that, you know, Bigfoot was the basic framework this would be built around, that's what totally sold me on it. Because
so you were determined.
People come to me all the time with opportunities to build companies with them on all sorts of different ideas, you know. And
yeah.
I do everything else. I do year-round. I work on everything else you could possibly imagine.
Well, I can't say anything. I pitched an idea to you with the gridlock also.
Like I had another guy pitch something to me this week, too, you know, that he wants to talk about next week. And it's just – and they're all things that, you know, I may or may not get involved in some of them, but I certainly wouldn't start a company based on something unless it was something that I was really into. And this stuff,
right,
I'm completely friggin' obsessed with. So it was a no-brainer for me to.
So you had already had it preset in your mind that if you couldn't do the Sasquatch, then you wouldn't be. It wouldn't have came, right?
Yeah, you know, that's the only thing that got me interested at all is, you know, when I heard about it, it was a Bigfoot project. Regardless of what it was, I was going to do it, you know. So that's what sold me on it. Because anyway, I have a ton of my own stuff that I've been developing for years in any kind of few minutes I have here and there. So that stuff would come before anything else. But when me and Jeff started talking, in addition to the fact that the Bigfoot project interested me,
well, this may
just
open
came
the door
off with
that,
such a good
right?
guy too. What's that?
This may open the door for some of your stuff, right? I mean,
we've already talked about. I've already pitched to him a few things that I've wanted to do for a long time that are they're sort of related to this, but sort of not. Basically, figure lines that I've been developing for a while, and. If, like I said, if we get a toehold with this, then that stuff may very well go right into production because I know we could sell it because no one's doing it. And it's really cool, and people are very into the type of stuff it is, but it just no one's doing it because it's another oddball idea.
Yeah, I don't want you to give away your secret recipe on air. We don't need anyone taking it from, you know.
Right.
But
no.
definitely when we talk
okay
in private,
if you
can mention it to me in private when we talk, then yeah, man, I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, possibly. We may, if the first line looks pretty good, I have an idea for one figure that would sort of kick off this second line that would fit into this line and it would fit into that line too. It's kind of an interesting choice. No one's done it. And,
So it's kind of a bridge figure.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And it would kill. We would sell a zillion of these friggin' things.
Oh, man, you have my mouth watering now. You have me real curious now.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know, again, I know how cutthroat the business is, and I damn sure don't want you to, you know, give anything away, you know, prematurely on air.
But if everything goes the way that we're hoping this year goes as far as getting the stuff into production and whatever our distribution looks like, then I would say by late in this year, we may be showing that figure. Because it could really work in either line, but it would be the bridge figure that would get us into this other line. And the line would definitely sell, you know. And it's something that we could sell in small stores. We could sell it in Toys R Us and Walmart without.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking about earlier. After we talked earlier on the phone, that's what I was kind of running through my head. Man, you know, I know kids who would buy these Bigfoot. You know, I know kids that watch the Finding Bigfoot shows. You know, then you got the whole Planet of the Apes movie coming out, and kids mm-hmm. don't care, man. They don't discern. Well, that's a Planet of the Apes movie, and this is a Bigfoot. They don't care about that. To them, it's all, you know, creatures and hair and you know. So, yeah, I really think that if it's marketed right, I really think that this line will take off. I really think it'll sell.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to, you know. And based on the response that we had even from kids in shows. Like when Jeff was at Horror Hound and at the Ohio show, people would come up with their kids and the kids were flipping out over it, you know. And, you know, I mean, what kid wouldn't flip out over a cool-looking monster, you know?
That's exactly what I'm saying, man. I mean, I think things have gotten really boring with the whole superhero crap and G.I. Joe. And, you know, and it's like you and I had talked earlier. I think that, you know, we talked earlier, and you said how there's nothing really new out there anymore, and how everything seems to be just rehashes from the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people resurrecting old licenses and things, and, you know, He-Man and Thundercats and all those things. Those are all pretty cool, but it's a lot like what's happening with movies. They just go back.
Yeah,
why write
exactly.
A new movie when you can just redo RoboCop, you know, or
yeah,
redo Evil Dead.
Yeah, or my daughter's favorite, Footloose. You know, it's
yeah.
Why the hell would that movie need to be remade? I don't get it, but, you know, hey, what the hell, you know? That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's hard to believe that the best era as far as toys go, and the 80s were booming for toys, man. It was, you know, that was one of the best decades there was. I mean, it's sad that no one. What happened to people's imaginations? Did it just kind of go away, or is it sadly to the point where everything's already been done? You know, I'd like to think that that's not the case. You know, because, you know, I mentioned to you a character of mine and a little bit of the story. You know, so I'd like to think that that's not the case. That there is still room to grow and develop and new stories out there just waiting to be. You know, but I think what it boils down to also is a supply and demand issue.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, it's what sells. You know, it's what people are familiar with. They're gonna buy what they're familiar with, or even even the whole aspect of if you know, like I mentioned earlier, if there's not a TV show or a movie. Or cartoon associated with these with a certain, you know, line. Oh, it's you know, they don't even want to take interest in it. You know, it's almost like,
yeah.
And you can kind of blame the 80s and He-Man and the Master Universe because that they were the first action figures to actually have a cartoon go along with them. So, and I've done a lot of reading on it, and I'm sure you know this as well. For them, the cartoon was their commercial.
Yeah.
And now
it's
gotten to where, you know, all these companies, they want that. They want to know with 100% certainty, hey, this is going to sell. This is definitely going to sell. We're going to make money. And that's all they're looking at is the money aspects of it, you know?
There's passionate people behind it, but now the theory has become that you just don't produce something unless there's some sort of media behind it. And typically, they develop cartoons and things like that with the toy lines being developed at exactly the same time, you know? So it's pretty much hand in glove, product and whatever the media source is, you know, a cartoon or a movie or a video game.
I think I just sold my pants, man. Jeff just sent me the pictures of them next to Ryback.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, holy shit, man. These things are massive. These things are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to post these pictures, man. Holy crap. Guys, if you're, you know, whoever's going to listen to the archive tomorrow, I'm sure you see the pictures before you actually listen to this, but these figures are awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty massive figures, especially if you compare, like, the Yeti to one of the regular figures there.
Well, he's got Sasquatch, Yeti, and Ryback standing next to each other. Yeah. I'm more stoked now than I was. That's that Yeti. His fucking thighs are almost as wide as Ryback's whole torso.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, he's a massive figure. Like I said, he's around 9 inches tall. And 9 inches doesn't sound huge until you see him in perspective with, you know, the average size figure, and then he looks massive. And it is. I mean, you pick the figure up, it's basically like, it's like the size of a Toy Biz Hulk figure.
Man, it's a little bit bigger and better looking than that. It's like, I'm telling you, man, my mouth is watering. I don't know if you can hear it on the air, but yeah. That's, Gene, that's awesome. I mean, you know, you sent me these individual images and you know, I kind of get an idea of what they look like. But it's mostly me imagining each side by side like this and how big they are.
Mm-hmm.
But these images that Jeff sent, I know now exactly what's coming.
Yeah, I haven't.
Awesome.
I just took another picture that I'm going to send you to. I took a picture of the Yeti next to Nightcrawler.
Now that's the Marvel Select Nightcrawler?
Yeah, so he's 7 inches tall. And I have a picture of him next to the Yeti. I just got to crop it out for you to check out.
That's really kind of tall for a human, 7 inches. Usually 6 inch. Well, I don't know. I guess it's...
The Marvel Select stuff is taller than...
right.
Bigger than the Toy
Hasbro
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because the Hasbro stuff is done at 6 inches, I think. DC
right.
Direct tends to be 6 3/4, and Marvel Select is 7 inches. They're all sort of in the same ballpark, but, you know, when you see them together, they definitely don't look like they're from the same universe. So, you know, I always compare to the Marvel Select stuff. But these guys will work within, you know, because of the size of Yetis and stuff like
that,
speculatively, they'll work within any of those universes. So,
yeah, and that's what's good about something like a Yeti and a Sasquatch, because they're known to be big. You know, they're known to have varying sizes, so you could actually, you know, put it with different scale humans, and it'll still work.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
but, man, dude, you're my hero. You're my idol. I want to be just like you when I grow up.
Yeah, this line's a dream come true without a doubt for me also. It's just all while I was working on it, I couldn't believe that that's what I was working on, you know?
Well, you know what, man? It's always awesome to do something that you personally like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to doing something that you're just getting paid to do.
Yeah.
Because I've done that. I've done commission work where people would send me the parts and they'd want me to make this certain figure, this certain way. And a lot of times you're like, oh, man, this is retarded. This is dumb. Why are they doing this, you know? But
mm-hmm.
you get paid for it, so you still got to go, you know?
Right. There's a comparison of the Yeti with the Nightcrawler.
All right. I'm going to let me finish posting these images, and I'll go ahead and get with that. In fact, man, we'll go ahead and get off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's asking if they're customs. Where the hell have you been, dude? That you think these are customs? Wow, very cool customs. Man, I'll let you answer that. Well, I guess I'll answer it. But I'm outside right now. I'll go in and I'll grab my cell phone and you can call me. We'll finish. We'll talk more on there if you want. Unless you're just ready for bed or whatever.
Actually, I got to jump because I got to get back to work on some stuff tonight. So I got to ship some castings out, but tomorrow morning. Well, we can catch up on another night on some more of this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. And like I said before, if you ever get down here in this area, let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereabouts are you again?
I'm in Mississippi. Yeah.
Yeah, see, eventually it's going to be worth, me and Jeff will end up in the woods on one of these expeditions at some point. I know he's looked into investigating a couple of things out by him in Indiana, so.
Yeah, man.
Point,
I mean,
sure
if you guys get down this way, both of you, excuse me, the invitation's for both of you. I mean, if you guys get down this way, I know we'll be in touch and talking and everything, but definitely let me know. Preferably the colder months, so we don't have to worry about snakes and poison ivy and stuff, things of that nature. But yeah, definitely let me know, and man, I'll be more than happy to take you guys out there.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But all right, man. Well, I'll let you go. I know you're on my web pages and groups and stuff like that, so I'm sure you can see people's mm-hmm. reactions. But yeah, you got anything else coming up? Don't hesitate to holler, call, hit me up on Facebook, whatever. But man, it was great talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about all the Bigfoot stuff and also, to plug the line. That's really cool, man.
No problem, man. I definitely want to get you back on the air. In fact, I was actually thinking that I might be able to make this show tonight a two-parter and continue next week. But, I mean, again, that's up to you entirely. We don't want to, flood the – I mean, it's up to you. It's fine by me.
Well,
but
it's kind of your – either way, it benefits what we're trying to do. I guess it's up to you whether you want to split it up that way. Works either way for me, so.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do it. Hell, next week we can talk strictly about Sasquatch and some of the things that we discussed earlier on the telephone, regarding Sasquatch and in general and all the theories. And I can get some other guys on. And we can all just sit around and shoot the shit about Sasquatch and things of that nature.
That'd be real interesting.
As opposed to, because we focused on the toy line a lot tonight, and next week we can get together and just talk about whatever hell you want to talk about, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool.
And I'll try to get, I know I can get, some callers to call in. I got a couple of buddies who were actually working tonight, so they weren't able to actually call in. But
yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go, and I'm sure I'll be hitting you up sometime in the next week.
Sure, absolutely, dude. Really appreciate it, Brian.
No, man, don't thank me. Shit, I'm thanking you. I'm thanking you.
Yeah, and also
the
cool, also the really cool promo stuff you put together. The pictures were really awesome.
Hey, that's what I like to do. I love doing it. It's kind of a hobby thing, and the toys are cool. I love those too. So it just made sense to do it all, And I'll continue to do it, As long as you send pics, I'll do it, man. It's no problem. Because I want to get it out there. I want to get it rolling, and I want it to go further and incorporate more of these cryptids and more of the things that I like, and obviously you like as well.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But you don't have to thank me, man. Hell, I'm thanking you. I'm, you're bringing something that I want. So, yeah, all right. Well, I'll let you go, and you have a good night, and thanks again for coming on tonight. And I look forward to having you back on next week, right?
Yeah, cool. Sounds great, Brian. I really appreciate it. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, one question. That's a Marvel Select Nightcrawler, right?
Yeah, yeah. They only sell them in comic stores, so you probably – I don't think you can find them closer up.
Oh, believe me, everybody that's going to see this picture knows what who it is, what it is, and where it can be found.
Yeah.
Man,
they may have just re-released him, too. He came out last year, I think. I think he got re-released also this year.
I've been doing my toy store thing for the last 3 years, and I've been on a lot of forums, Marvelous News, and a lot of different other forums, Boy Arc, stuff like that. And I've gotten a lot of supporters and followers and fans, if you will. And believe me, there's probably about 100 people who are seeing these images right now who are definitely going to get them, if not more.
That's definitely going to make it easier for us to keep doing them, that's for sure.
And I'm talking all over the world too, brother. I'm talking, I got customers in Hong Kong that are on my Facebook pages. I've got, France, UK. So, it's getting out a lot further than just the United States.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
That's no problem, man. Hey, I look at it like this. We're all in the same boat. We're all on the same planet. You might as well help each other out, two heads are better than one, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, all right, man, I'm kind of rambling, but I'll let you go, and I'll be in touch with you soon.
All right, Brian. Thanks, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Gene. You have a good night.
You too, bro. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that'll end it for our show tonight, and I appreciate you guys listening, and you have a good night as well.